Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Smoking Snake podcast. This is episode 75 of one of the thousands of Brazilian football podcasts all about English. Just kidding. We're the only one. please welcome back. It's been a bit. We've had Thanksgiving here in the United States, and it's just so hard to catch up with the family and enjoy the holidays and catch up with Brazilian football, but we're finally here. This is going to be a bit of a catch-up episode, looking back at some of the Seleção fixtures, as well as the matches that were played as catch-up matches and make-up matches in the Brasil that are out. And also, Henrique's going to talk us through the drama of Serie B and who's looking like they might get promoted and all that good stuff. So, Henrique, how's it going, man? How'd you enjoy your Thanksgiving?
It's going pretty well. Thanksgiving was nice, celebrated with my family. But as you said, we had so many games and I didn't let Thanksgiving keep me away from Brasileirão. I still made sure I could watch the Botafogo game, the Flamengo game. So it's always nice to have those postponed games that were supposed to be played probably 5 or 6 match weeks ago happen now in a time where international break was happening. And it's something that we don't really enjoy. So glad we had some Brasileirão action. What about you? How was your Thanksgiving?
Yeah, my Thanksgiving was great. A lot of time with family, a lot of running all over the place. Michigan got a big win over Ohio State, so we're happy in that department. Just a great little break here, but we're back. We're back to the grind of reality, and we're back to the grind of the closing stages of the Brasileirão. But like you mentioned, international break. Brazil was, of course, in action, kind of a stumbling start to their World Cup qualifications. And man, that theme continued. 2 games, 2 losses, and their defense and their attack didn't look that great in either of these games. A lot more to say on both of them. But Henrique, let's just start with Colombia. A defeat for Brazil in Barranquilla in Colombia. Colombia 2, Brazil 1. Really just a bad start to the international break. Colombia, a team that struggled recently on the international stage, and Brazil, a team that's constantly on the lookout for World Cups and Copa Americas. Not the result you wanted or expected.
Yeah, definitely. And it's crazy how these international matches change. We had the first game when we played Bolivia. Brazil looked like the Brazil that played for 2022 World Cup qualifiers when they didn't lose a single match other than the postponed game against Argentina. And after that, everything went downhill. You can mention the win against Peru. Still, we barely made it into that one. And it was probably like a wake-up call for our team of what was going to come. And especially without Neymar, these results in the last 2 matches pretty explain itself pretty much. So, yeah, Brazil unable to do anything attacking or creating in terms of chances. And it's been a really poor performance, especially against Colombia when we played away. Yes, we got that first goal with Martinelli in the 4th minute, but then we got punished in the second half by a man that just came onto the field and score 2 against Brazil. So it's pretty unlucky to see that, to see us go down in that way, especially when you score first. Brazil usually gets a draw at worst, not a loss, but things happen. And it's sad that this is actually the first back-to-back loss in competitive games since the 2014 World Cup, when we lost to Germany and then we lost to none other than Netherlands for a 3rd spot. So it's been 9 years since then, and yeah, it's been a long time, and it's something that we don't really enjoy to see as Brazilian fans.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the goal versus Colombia. It was the only goal Brazil would score this match week in the qualifiers. Fantastic team goal. Came in the 4th minute. And I think it's Jonathan Wilson has a thing about scoring too early. And they certainly did. They were the better team, I thought, through much of the game. But in the end, it was Luis Diaz who was running around like a madman, had a bunch of good opportunities, and finally cashed in within 4 minutes of each goal. Two headers from two crosses, which would be a problem in the Argentina game as well. But cool to see, I guess, on a level. Luis Diaz, of course, his father was kidnapped by, I think it was like leftist guerrillas, the predecessor group. It might have been ELN or the predecessor or the successor of FARC. And in a case of mistaken identity, too. But anyways, he's back, and Luis Diaz scoring two with him in the stadium, which was cool. You mentioned the Neymar injury, another crushing injury. Vinicius Jr. Gone till February. That's really unfortunate, more from Real Madrid as they try to keep control of La Liga. But yeah, just a disjointed attack and two goals from crosses. Really the other headline, Endrick, making his debut, fourth youngest of all time to make his debut for the Salsao. Very impressive. He looked great in the kit. He's going to be great. And it's just crazy, the parallels between him and Pelé, just the build, the intellect, going to be a great player. Unfortunately, didn't do enough for another Brazil goal. All right. So the second game, this time Brazil at home facing their arch rivals, Argentina, at the Maracanã, the temple of football. And the action started before the whistle even blew. Horrible scenes in the crowd where fans clashing. You had the police charging in with their batons and beating fans. Lots of blood, lots of pain. And the Argentina players actually walked off the pitch. Enric, what were you thinking when you saw this chaos? Like, this is just crazy, next level. I mean, bad blood, of course, is a given when it comes to this fixture, but this is just unacceptable, and it's really sad to see.
Yeah, it's really sad, and it goes back to that Libertadores final when we saw Fluminense and Boca Juniors fans clashing with each other before the game, and then whether that was outside the stadium, this one was in, and everybody could see what is happening. It's actually very sad. So two teams that all the fans go into the stadium to watch the rivalry, and then something unexpected and unfortunate happens. It's really sad. And at the end of the day, nobody's going to stop. I think over time, Brazil and Argentina are always going to have this in between each other. And it's good that our friends, Rodrigo Lazzarini and Mauricio Destri, were into this game. And fortunately, they were on the opposite end of the clash. So good that they weren't part of that. And yeah, it's definitely something that we don't want to see any time in the future. But when I saw the Argentinian players going back into the lockers rooms, I thought that this game is probably going to be over as it happened during COVID.
Yeah.
But fortunately, we had a chance to see it. And yeah, at the end of the day, it wasn't a good result for Brazil, but I'm happy the game was played anyways.
Yeah, I had that exact same thought. I thought that they were going to stop the match. And that match seems like forever ago during COVID when they stopped the match. But no, they did end up playing. And despite this fan chaos, I was surprised to hear. I was listening to Tim Vickery on Sky Sports talking about the lack of fan segregation. And it's weird because for the club matches in the Maracanã, away fans have a segregated section, but apparently not for international matches. And that was a lot of the issue. Organized Brazilian fans and organized Argentine fans were sitting right next to each other. And that's just a tinderbox. You add in the police and their heavy-handed tactics there. It's really not a surprise. So hopefully they figure that out as far as, the configuration of the stadium and where they put which fans. The only other note, the chaos and the Argentine players walking off, inspired a clash, Rodrigo versus Messi, which has really blown up online. You know, some pretty nasty messages going back and forth between the fan bases, but apparently Rodrigo called Messi a coward, and Messi kind of swatted him away. So we'd prefer to keep that sort of, you know, the clashes verbal. So that's a nice little side story, and it should be an interesting clash next time they come together. But let's talk about the football on the pitch. Another disjointed game for the Brazilian attack. Neither team really looked all that great. It was kind of a choppy game, lots of fouls. I think that was kind of the game plan for Brazil. You know, whether that was before the, all the chaos in the beginning or against, what did you think of the actual match and the football? And was it more or less what you were expecting?
I think Brazil performed way better than I was expecting them to, especially without Neymar and coming with a recent result when we drew against Venezuela, lost to Uruguay. I thought that in this match, Brazil would get smashed despite playing at home. And it seemed like Brazil had a lot of intensity. They attacked a lot, created so many chances in both halves. And the goals could have came. There was a chance, I believe, in the first half by Martinelli, in which he had passed like two or three players, open shot, passed it into Emi Martinez's hands. And the same scenario with Gabriel Jesus in the second half. So two great chances there that could have given us the opener. And probably the only goal I think Brazil, after scoring, would have defended throughout the whole match. And unfortunately, when you don't score the chances that you have, you get punished. And right after, we saw Otamendi with his header score against Alisson. I don't think Alisson is a bad keeper. I think throughout the whole time, I always said I would like to see Ederson more. But now that I've seen Ederson, I'm convinced that Alisson is our main guy, and as he should. I think it's the defense's fault that for the goals that Brazil has been conceding recently. And yeah, unfortunately, we get punished here by one goal only. And maybe we could have gotten a tie out of this match. It would have been a very good result, especially when playing in Maracanã in your home field. But Argentina takes the 3 points. And despite Brazil's current position, I don't think this is anything to worry about. For sure, we're going to make it to the World Cup. So 6 places, and I believe the 7th goes to playoffs. We shouldn't be afraid of that, but still Brazil needs to perform as a top nation and be at least top 2 or top 3.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's true. And I'm not really sure how the structure goes of the pots and who gets divvied up into which group now that the World Cup is expanding for 2026. But yeah, you want to be near the top of the pile to get the best group possible. Couple more things on the game. Purist Football on YouTube had a really good breakdown of kind of the lack of attacking guile in the Brazilian side. He had a great video about Fernando Diniz and his tactics at Fluminense as well. So I just wanted to shout that out. It was pretty interesting and an interesting look at what's wrong with Brazil and their attack. One goal between two games. It was pretty dire. Carlos Augusto, I don't know about him. I think I had my reservations, and I know Inter has been doing great this year, but not sure about him. The defensive line does not inspire confidence, and when the attack isn't buzzing, then man, Brazil just looks a little bit stagnant and stale. I think you're right. They looked a little bit better than maybe the later stages of the Colombia game. But that Martinelli chance will definitely haunt me. That should have been a goal. Jolinton also, I thought it was kind of a soft red. DePaul seemed to have grabbed a hold of him and he kind of pushed him off. I don't really know exactly why that was so much of a red. Maybe I missed something in the replay. But as a result, Brazil now 6th place after 6 games. Like you said, I think, you know, a World Cup berth is pretty much a given, I would say, and I think no one needs to worry. But you know, the way this team is playing right now, certainly they're not going to go very far in a World Cup against some of the best teams in the world. So we'll have to work something out, Fernando. Come on. Also, other news saw Ancelotti in the news saying that there's still not an agreement, or not at least acknowledging an agreement. So, man, Denise, really, you got to figure it out because he's our last hope. All right, Enric, let's breeze through some under 17 World Cup action. Brazil are out. They were eliminated in the quarterfinals again against an extremely powerful Argentine side. But before that, we had some crazy results, including one against New Caledonia, the French protectorate, 9-0. What a beating. They also beat England and Ecuador on the way to the quarterfinal. Any comments on this one?
Yeah, the 9-0, I think Brazil needed to perform, especially after losing our first match against Iran, 3-2. So 9 goals helped us a lot for the goal difference in terms of who gets second or third in the group. And fortunately, we also got that win against England, which made us end up in the second spot. If we had scored one more goal, I think Brazil would have been first. But other than that, we went to the round of 16. I saw the first 15 minutes of that match. It was played at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. our time. So I got to see Estevao's goal. And then when I woke up, I saw that Brazil had won, and I was very happy. But so we played against Argentina on Thursday. We lost 1-0. And then Friday, I believe, was the match for the under-17s. And I was hoping to wake up with good news there as well. I thought Brazil could probably get the win. And I didn't know Argentina had such a good team and such a good striker as Echeverri, who scored 3. And yeah, it's unfortunately that we get out, and it's something that we've seen not only by the under-17s, but also from our regular national team not making it to the semifinals anytime. So really sad that we lost, and we ended up when we came out of that tournament in that way. But hopefully those youngsters have more areas to prove themselves in the Brasileirão under-17 or under-20. And hopefully in 2030, they can give us a title in the World Cup. Who knows? But going back, Estevao, definitely one of the biggest stars in Brazil history. And I can't wait to see what this guy's career is going to come to, like Endrick and Vitor Roque and more like him.
Yeah, absolutely. You absolutely understand the nickname Messinho on that kid, William Estevao. Remember that name, Palmeiras product. He should probably be featuring for the senior team very soon. All right, to wrap up the U17 World Cup, Argentina and Germany play, and France and Mali play. Mali, interesting one, the beating Morocco and Mexico on their way to the semifinals. So kind of cool to see an African nation make it that far, and they seem like a decent team, especially beating Morocco. And Mexico are no jokes in the youth side.
Yeah, an African team and a team that nobody has really seen perform when it comes to the big stages in the past. And I don't know if you know, but in Albanian, the word Mali, and exactly M-A-L-I, means mountain. So I don't know if that could be a translation in African language or anything like that, but it's funny that maybe for American people, they don't know when they see the name, but for me, it automatically translates. I'm like, what? Mountain? Mountain is playing? So it's actually funny.
All right, there we go. Maybe we have a weekly segment learning a bit of Albanian. But tell you what, France will definitely have a mountain to climb, and they'll have their hands full with Mali. All right, so let's move it on to the Brasileirão. We had a bunch of makeup matches to get over with. And a lot of points up for grabs, and a lot of important matches, direct rivals for both the title and the relegation battle. So a lot on the line here. We will go over match week 35, which was just played in this week's. We'll do an episode later this week on two match days. For now, we're going to keep with the makeup matches. And we'll leave that for later in the week. Let's start off with a makeup match from match week 29, quite a bit of time ago. Fortaleza facing off against Botafogo. I believe this one was delayed due to Fortaleza's participation in Sudamericana final. And the stakes could not be higher. Botafogo, the title is slipping through their fingers like sand. They've got to do something. And man, this game probably couldn't have started off much worse. A goal within the first 8 minutes. Beautiful, beautiful goal. Iago Pikachu on the end of it, putting it in the net. But I was really impressed with Caio Alexandre's sort of second assist, the assist before the assist. More of a scooped ball to Kalibe, and he crosses it. Pikachu, quick VAR check. It's a good goal. And Fortaleza are off and running. And it's no easy feat getting anything out of them when they're playing at home.
Yeah, and you mentioned match week 29. Just to give our listeners an idea, this is the week when Santos played against Coritiba, 1-2-1 at home. So it's been so long ago. And yeah, a match that Botafogo needed to win, probably one of their only difficulties left in order to clinch a win in the Brasileirão. If they had won this match, I think their path to success would have been easier, because we all know, as you mentioned, how difficult it is to play in the Castelão Stadium. But that first goal by Fortaleza, I think, killed Botafogo's hopes. They were able to get a goal back in the 20th minute. Unfortunate own goal by Brites in favor of Botafogo tied the match 1-1. And Fortaleza actually scored a second before halftime. So if Botafogo had any chances of maybe getting a winner here in the second half, this was definitely killed by that goal right before halftime. Guilherme gets a second, and I don't know what was going through Botafogo's players' mind, especially they've been up so high throughout the league and throughout every week, and in the match weeks of Brasileirão, they're 15 points up, and to be able to choke the competition in this way, it's really, really sad. Even for me, that I said I don't want to see Botafogo win. I also don't want to see Palmeiras win. But if I had to choose between the two, I would rather have Botafogo win this championship. And it's actually very, very sad to see the scenes of what has been happening for them. I was talking, by the way, to Mauricio Destri before this match was played. I said, hopefully Botafogo wins this one, and then they have to play Santos. In one way, I don't want to see Santos lose, because I support them and I also want them to get out of relegation zone as soon as possible. But I also don't want Palmeiras to win, so I don't know who I'll be supporting. But after this game, it was pretty self-explanatory. Botafogo digging their own grave and tying 2-2 away from home definitely killed their hopes of any title. Adrielson had a chance to make it 2-1, I believe, in the first half. He hits the post. Unfortunate. The ball gets rebounded off his body and then to the goalkeeper. So double chance there and no goal. So Danilo Barbosa tied it 2-2 at the very end. But still, Botafogo needed to get the win, as Palmeiras were always behind them looking to use any opportunity to achieve that first spot for the first time in this competition.
Yeah, and I think you could see it kind of a couple ways. First and foremost, not a great performance by Botafogo. Of course, away at one of the hardest grounds to play at. So no blame there. But, you know, like you said, Adrielson getting the chance, the own goal, and Daniel Barbosa finally stepping up. You know, those aren't players that are traditionally goal scorers, and relying on own goals is ridiculous. They only had one shot on target. You know, they're just, their attacking prowess has really declined. They've just run out of steam. I think that's as easy as it goes. I mean, you could trace it back to Luis Castro or however you want to do it, but the pressure got to them and they ran out of steam. And I really think you're right. I think this draw really seals it. Good gritty performance for them to get anything out of this. But yeah, I think this can only be seen as kind of the final nail in the coffin. And it might be a little harsh to say they've dug their own graves, but I really think that this is probably it, and now Palmeiras will be in control of the league for two match days, and they'll probably spar it out with Flamengo, who we'll get to in a little bit. But yeah, sad to see Botafogo. They were kind of my team that I wanted to see win the title, and it's just really unfortunate. Adrielson and Lucas Perry, I believe, are both going to John Textor's other club, Olympique Lyonnais in France next year. So it'll be interesting to see what this team does. But it's really unfortunate to see the meltdown and the bottle job that they've accomplished this year. But let's keep it moving. Match week 30, the makeup two match weeks or two games to make up here. And again, kind of two ends of the table here in contrast and in contention. Cruzeiro playing for, of course, survival. Flamengo and Red Bull Bragantino, very much a grudge match for the title. But Enric, let's start with Fortaleza again hosting Cruzeiro. And Cruzeiro doing what Botafogo couldn't, coming away with a win. You can't describe this in any other way other than a massive break for Cruzeiro.
Yeah, and I think this game was played before Fortaleza played Botafogo. So Fortaleza had plenty of chances. They dominated throughout the match, and they had a goal disallowed for offside in the first half. And then Cruzeiro came out of nowhere. They had a very questionable goal. The camera angle for the VAR, I believe, was wrong, because if they had gone exactly perpendicular to the play, they would have found Bruno Rodriguez offside. But the goal gets counted. Not a good result for us Santos supporters. We would have liked to see Fortaleza either win or draw. But after that, I think this result made Fortaleza play the way they played against Botafogo, after they didn't want to lose two in a row at home, as they have done in the past, especially since losing that Sudamericana final. They've been completely different. But yeah, they lose here. Very surprising, and not a good result again for Santos supporters.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Fortaleza dominated, and the goal, it was just a lifeline for Cruzeiro. And like you said, for us Santos supporters, still things are in, they're in the team's hands, but things are up in the air. We haven't gotten to that 45 point mark just yet, or above it, as needed, and Cruzeiro keeping things interesting. Just really quick on the goal. I know I saw a lot of commentary and things about the angle and all of this. And from my understanding, there's quite a bit more math involved in it than just the camera angle. And I always think back to, this is going to be more of a Canadian or Northern American, reference here, but something called the parallax angle, which was so hotly contested in an ice hockey game back in 2004, which would have won the championship for a Canadian team, the Calgary Flames. But the angle looked like the puck had crossed the line, but the parallax angle from above, right, indicated that it actually had not fully crossed the line, despite the optical illusion of it. So I'd like to think VAR is doing the math and they are seeing Bruno Rodriguez is actually onside. And maybe that's me choosing to believe it and having faith in VAR, but that's kind of where I fall on that. Bruno Rodriguez as well, 8 goals, 3 assists in the Brasileirão. Nice little player for Cruzeiro. I think he's bailed them out of a few pretty poor situations, and a team that's a little bit, they've had some bad luck, they've had some good luck, and their lineup doesn't inspire that much, but I think they have some decent players that are just inconsistent when you think about, like, Bruno Rodriguez or Arthur Gomez, Wesley Gasolina as well. So yeah, good on them, and they keep making it an interesting battle for relegation. On the other spectrum, on a different side of the spectrum, other side of the table, Flamengo hosting Red Bull Bragantino, big match for the title, direct competition. And it was a smoke-filled Maracanã to kick off the ball or to kick off the match. And both teams, I thought, looked good. Red Bull Bragantino standing firm against Flamengo, the giants of Rio. And I thought it was a really good game that ended ultimately in Flamengo's favor.
Yeah, Flamengo has been completely different ever since Tite has come into this team. And they've turned things around. The mistakes that Vitor Pereira and even Sampaoli had done in the past, seems like Tite took all these mistakes and turned it into Flamengo's favor, but also into the attacker's favor. We've seen changes in Pedro. He's been scoring a lot recently. And then another man that has been scoring, Derascaeta. This guy has saved Flamengo pretty much in every game in the past. I think he scored against Fluminense when they tied 1-1 and then gets a goal here in the 75th. One goal that is not a lot, but still does Flamengo a lot of favors. They've been jumping up that table a lot ever since Tite came in. So I'm really glad to see the competition be in the position it is right now with Botafogo, Flamengo, Grêmio, Palmeiras, Atletico Mineiro, all fighting to win this championship.
It's by far, and you've seen it all over Twitter, the most interesting and competitive league in the world. And that's why we love it so much. And this game was really emblematic of that. Red Bull Bragantino, a team probably not a lot of people have even heard of, standing against the giants of Brazil, the most popular team in the country, and doing pretty well. You mentioned Jorginho Derascaeta, who had the goal, great goal from Pulgar, delicate little touch. You mentioned Pedro, who's been scoring. Everton Cebolinha as well has been a renaissance under Chiche. Awesome to see. I think he's a really great player. I know I've been, I've never been one to bite my tongue when it comes to praising him. I'm a big fan of the player, and I thought that, you know, maybe given a little more time, he even could have worked and worked well in Europe, even for a side like Benfica. But I'm happy to have him in the Brasileirão, even despite him being for Flamengo. But he and the big players of Flamengo are really turned this team around. They went from crisis to one of the best shots at winning this title. So this win puts them on the right direction. And Red Bull Bragantino, it's unfortunate. They've kind of been knocked off their perch. They were the number two team for a while. I thought they might even jump up and be a surprise winner of the league. I'm not sure about that anymore, especially given the events of match day 35. But again, anything can happen. We've got a lot more football to play. So a great game. But for me, Flamengo just look like they have that edge, and they might be a nice little pick for a title this year. All right, let's flip on over to the other side of Rio, the green and maroon side, the tricolor of Fluminense. They've captured Libertadores title, and they've captured 3 points here versus Sao Paulo. Who else but Herman Cano sinking a 10-man Sao Paulo?
Yeah, I mean, this guy, what a crazy player. He scored in that Libertadores final and then gets the job done again here against Sao Paulo. A long-range shot. Ended up 1-0, just like Flamengo beat the Rebel Bragantino, but still very important to get the points here despite both teams not needing them. Both of them have been qualified for Libertadores, Fluminense to winning that competition, and then Sao Paulo for winning Copa do Brasil. But it's always nice to see one of the best teams in Brazil, or two of the best teams in Brasil, compete against each other. I think if Neves didn't get a red card in the 29th minute for Sao Paulo, things would have been a lot different. We would have seen goals by both teams and maybe a 2-1, 3-1 victory, but either side. So that red card limited things a bit. But yeah, it's definitely a match that everybody should have been watching.
Yeah, for sure. And Herman Cano, just looking at the stats right now, just his 9th goal of the season. So quite a bit of ways from his totals last year, but his, 9th goal in the Brasileirão, 39 goals though, total, Libertadores, the Rio State Championships, you know, absolutely lighting it up. He's getting old, but he scoring in Libertadores final, keeps scoring for Fluminense. This guy is really just turning into quite a Fluminense legend, despite actually playing for their city rivals, who we'll get to in a minute. And Sao Paulo on the other side, you know, you're right. I think they probably would have played a lot better if Neves hadn't had that early red card, but they've got a nice team. And really the question for me, they seem to be on autopilot. They're not going to win. They're not going to be relegated. And I think they have their eye on next season. They've already established that they'll be in Libertadores with the Copa do Brasil win. And really the question for me on them is, can they keep these big players they've acquired and what they can do with them? They've got some aging players, of course, but I think a lot of players that will still be able to make an impact. So I'd be really interested to see what they can do next season. All right, so let's round off the episode by talking about another crucial match, this time in terms of relegation. Two direct rivals going at it, Cruzeiro and Vasco da Gama. Unfortunately, no crowd in the stadium. This is, of course, due to the Cruzeiro fans invading the pitch in Curitiba a couple weeks ago. But that didn't do much to cut the tension there. Incredibly important match for both sides. What do you think about this one, Henrik?
I mean, crazy game. And again, relegation teams that coming off from the Santos perspective, a draw here would have done us a lot of favor. As I've said in the past, I always want to see Vasco da Gama draw against relegation sides, and they pretty much have been doing us favors. Puma Rodriguez opened scoring in the 15th minute, and what a golazo that was. He flicked the ball up in the air and then shot it. I think it hit between the post and the net and went in, and what a crazy shot that was to give Vasco da Gama the lead. But Cruzeiro didn't hold back. Right before halftime, it was Arthur Gomez who scored one in the 41st, and then a penalty kick by Bruno Rodriguez to get the second in the 45th. Another penalty goal that gave Cruzeiro the lead before halftime. And then throughout that match, I think things were a little balanced. Both teams wanted to get that win, but something that we definitely didn't want to see was Cruzeiro winning. I think that would have been worse than Vasco winning for us. So luckily, around the 77-minute mark, it was Gabriel Peck who tied the match for Vasco da Gama. And I think Vasco had a third goal as well around the 90th minute mark. It was disallowed for offside. Very, very close, by the way. But a result that really helped Santos. So yeah, 2-2 draw that I think it's going to do us a lot of favor. And hopefully both Vasco and Cruzeiro keep fighting until the very end while we escape relegation before they do.
Yeah, well, that's what we're all hoping for. And you're right. This result is good stuff for Santos. Going back, I mean, the Pumita Rodriguez goal, sensational. He's so slick. He's got a lot of skills. I know he's maybe had a little bit of a roller coaster ride here with Vasco, as they all have. You know, we talked about Gabriel Pecky as well. His 8 goals and 4 assists in the Brasileirão. I think we were talking a lot about him in the beginning and now, but there's a huge gap in the middle where he wasn't performing and the team wasn't performing. But yeah, he and Puma Rodriguez, I think nice players and maybe trying to find a little bit more consistency. Also wanted to say after the penalty, Bruno Rodriguez hit the CR7 Sally, the CU, which I thought was pretty interesting. I don't know about that one. I don't know if he's earned the right for that, but decent player. And yeah, you're right. The goal at the end or the ruled back was really tough. You know, again here, I guess if they're taking the VAR and they're looking at it, you know, I tend to trust that opinion. It did look extremely close, and Vasco fans, I understand why they'd feel hard done. on the flip side, it's almost as if it's a wash because Cruzeiro's Wesley had an opportunity right at the end of the game and he scuffed it. Might have been off his knee or couldn't get his first touch right. So, you know, with a little bit of luck going either way, it could have been 3-3 rather than 2-2. But in the end, they do split the points. Good for Santos, and both teams will take a point, although, again, these points are so valuable for these teams right now. They're desperate for anything they can get, and both of these teams just barely hanging on here, and they'll be keep battling for these remaining match weeks. So plenty of action still to come. At the end of match week 34, Cruzeiro and Vasco, the two teams that we just mentioned, again, just outside of the relegation area, 41 points for both of them. Bahia dipping back down. Palmeiras, Botafogo, and Flamengo are the top three. Grêmio, Red Bull Bragantino, Atlético Mineiro, Atlético Paranaense, and Fluminense rounding out the top eight. Henrik, any other teams that you want to call out or shout out or call to our attention in this table after 34 match weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that at least every team now has the same amount of games played. Now we can look at the table more seriously, and with 4 weeks left, it's going to be very entertaining to see who gets up and who gets down. America already relegated, Coritiba, one loss away from doing so. And then it's a matter of who else is going to get the 18th and 17th spot. I think Goiás are not going to get promoted. And now we have to fight with the likes of big teams like Inter, Corinthians, even Fortaleza, Vasco, Cruzeiro for that 17th spot. And things are looking good for us at the moment. The only thing that I don't like is the goal average, because it really hurts us. Because in Brazil, the rankings between teams start with points, and then it's the number of wins. And in case we have the same amount of wins and points as, for example, Vasco da Gama, we're going to find themselves below them because of our goal average. Negative 18 at the moment. I believe the fourth worst in Brazil, so it's not looking great. This means that when Santos lost, they lost by a lot of goals compared to teams that probably lost by one or two max. We probably conceded four. So I don't like that. And other than that, hopefully things turn out for the best of us and we can do the impossible and survive.
Yeah, and even just looking at some of our competition, Cruzeiro +2 goal difference, Vasco -8 goal difference, Bahia -8. I mean, we're not even in the same ballpark. So yeah, that's something that's really a concern. I think it's no joke, or it's no secret really, that Santos struggles heavily defensively. So, that's no surprise, but you're right. We've got to get our shit together and get these points and not rely on something as trivial as the goal difference. All right, Henrik, you are also our Serie B correspondent. You're keeping up with the games. You're keeping us current with the goings-ons. We can come back to this later this week and talk about the final teams that have been promoted and relegated here. But for now, let's just stick with match week 36 and 37 in Serie B. Lots of games you got on the shared doc here. Why don't you talk us through kind of the important stuff?
All right. So last time we did our episode, we talked about match week 36, but there were two matches that had not been played. It was Guarani and Striciúma. They tied a 1-1. And Abese, the team that's been relegated, tied 0-0 with Juventud. And because of this result, it meant that Vitória were officially the winners of Serie B. And I think it's been a pretty good run from them. I believe in the first five or six matches in the Serie B, they won all and they never conceded. So they went six games with a clean sheet, and it's pretty impressive for a team that has not been in the top division for, I believe, 3 or 4 years, if not more. And then on Saturday, last week, we had match week 37. We had Ituano draw 0-0 against Chapecoense. With this draw, Ituano now are guaranteed to stay in Serie B. And Chapecoense jumps up one place, but still in the relegation zone, currently 17th. Longina lost 1-0 to Novo Horizontino. Longina had been already relegated, so they had nothing to play for. Novorozhchenko now 2 points away from third place, and 1 point away from fourth spot. So last season, they barely survived in Serie B. This season, they could even make it to the top division. Criciúma won 3-0 against Botafogo of São Paulo. Now Criciúma, with this result, are officially promoted, first time since 2017. And one player, interesting guy, former Sampdoria, Inter Milan, São Paulo, and Italy international, Eder plays for them, and I'm glad to see him compete with this side. Hopefully he doesn't do what Nene did last season when he promoted Vasco da Gama, then he decided to still play in Serie B with Juventus. So maybe he's going to repeat that again, because I think Juventus had been promoted. We're going to be talking about match week 38 on Friday's episode. So in this match, Botafogo of Sao Paulo had nothing to play for. Mirassol won 4-1 against Atletico Goianiense. Mirassol and Chico Kim, who scored in this match, get themselves in the same position as Novorozhchenko, still hoping for promotion. And Atletico Goianiense were doing so well throughout the season. Now they dropped to fifth with this loss. And we're going to be talking again on Friday what happens to them if they get promoted or not. Vitória gets a win against Sport Recife. Vitória, who I said were already qualified, nothing to play for. They beat Sport, and it's very unfortunate to see Sport end up this way. It was a much-needed win for them, and now they are heavily dependent on the last round. It's a game that they should have won. They were second or first even throughout the whole Brasileirão, sort of what Botafogo did all year, and now they find themselves out of the promotion zone. So it's really sad to see the team of Wagner Love end up this way. Juventude tied 0-0 against Ponte Preta, and now with this with a win, they could have secured a third spot. Now anything is possible, even a failure to promotion for the last round. Ponte Preta with a draw are now 2 points ahead of relegation zone. Guarani lost 2-3 against ABC. ABC already relegated. They are ranked 20th and grabbed their fourth win of the season against a team that, if they had won this match, they could have still been alive for promotion in the last round. So another Sao Paulo team not doing well and giving themselves a harder time for promotion. Villanova wins 3-1 against Ceará. Villanova now jumped to fourth with this win, and Ceará, with nothing to play for, they're not going to be bothered by this loss. Sampaio Correa won 4-1 against Avaí. Avaí with nothing to play for. There was an early red card in this match, and Sampaio now find themselves in the same position as Ponte Preta, hoping to get to stay in Serie B next year. And in the last match of this round, we had CRB win 2-0. I think the long name is Clube de Regatas de Brazil. They win against Tombense. CRB, nothing to play for, but Tombense now tied with points with 17th placed Chapecoense. So we already know who got promoted, who got relegated, but we're going to be talking again about these matches of the final week on Friday. So stay tuned and wait. So if you haven't been informed already, to see who made it to Syria out of 2024.
All right. Yeah. So tons of action in Serie B. Again, that was just through match week 37. And like Henrik said, we'll review the match week that's just passed in the Friday episode. But also in the Friday episode, we'll be reviewing match week 35 in Brazil, as well as match week 36, which is occurring in the next day or so. Some enormous games. Every game pretty much at this point is enormous. Their seasons are on the line next year. That is, there's even a trophy on the line for a decent money amount of teams here. Just want to go through some of the highlights here. Botafogo and Santos is a match that we'll be talking about. That again, we kind of know the results here, but that had a lot of impact. Atlético Paranaense and Vasco, Flamengo as well, playing Fortaleza, Palmeiras, are all big matches in match week 35 and match week 36, which we'll also be covering again. humongous matches, humongous points up for grabs. Vasco and Corinthians squaring off, which could see an incredible flip-flop of Vasco and Corinthians. Vasco almost pretty much considered dead in the water a couple of months ago. Now they could be above Corinthians, which would be incredible. Santos hosting Fluminense, a chance again to take another step. I think 3 points would take them to 46, which would theoretically mean they were safe. So a big win for them would mean a lot. Flamengo and Atletico Mineiro clashing, two top teams. Palmeiras face America, first versus last. And Botafogo travel to Curitiba to play Curitiba, of course. And they'll try to stay in the hunt as well. So tons of action to come. This league is not decided. There's a relegation zone is not decided. So much to play for and so many reasons to watch the Brasileirão. Henrik, I think you've gone over Serie B, match week 38 and the things to come. Any other comments before we wind down the episode?
No, I mean, it's going to be a nice round of matches, both match week 35 and 36, which will be played midweek. As you said, the Vasco Corinthians game are going to be very big. Santos playing against Fluminense. I think we can get a win here. I don't know why, but I know Fluminense is a tough team and they have nothing to play for. And playing in Vila Belmiro, I think this is the match that Santos performs well. They don't perform well against small sides. They perform well against big teams and at home. So hopefully we can get the 3 points there against the Libertadores winners.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good. We will be back later in the week evaluating, of course, all the action in the Brasileirão. But until then, everyone, have a great night, and we'll be back soon.